This is Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. In looking back on Donald Sutherland's amazing career, I realize there's no such thing as a Donald Sutherland role, as he keeps reinventing himself with each film, and none more so than in his latest, The Leisure Seeker, where he stars with Helen Mirren as the couple John and Ella Spencer, who decide to take a road trip. It opens on March 9th, and it is my great honor and pleasure to welcome Donald Sutherland here today. It is really great to meet you.
Oh, it's lovely to see you. I mean, I said I'd seen you so many times on Rachel Maddow, but I'm very happy to be here at NPR.
So since you switch it up so much in your movies, will you immediately know if something's right for you?
I don't know whether I will, but I think the character will know. You know, my wife said, I had received I received an honorary Oscar on the 11th of November. And in the speech that I gave, my wife suggested that among the other people that I thank my characters, the people that I had played, because they have informed me so much over my life. And so it really has much more to do with them.
Mm-hmm. You know. And we should say your wife is Francine Rossette. You've been married for 45 years, so she should know how your characters have impacted you.
Yes.
So what made you like John Spencer?
He did, really. I read him and did some research. I contacted a woman named Tipa Snow, who trains people to deal with people who have a dementia problem. And rather than going back and looking at people who have dementia, I wanted to look at the people who train people who take care of people who have dementia and see what they encounter. And then John just came alive and he started to say stuff. And I listened to him.
So that's interesting. You sort of reverse engineered studying this character. What was the number one thing you learned from the people who care for people with dementia that informed how you would play John Spencer?
The obvious one is the frustration of not remembering, but the belief in those times that you do remember everything, and there are moments of extraordinary clarity, you know. I mean, I occasionally will forget to turn the tap off in the sink. Those moments are truly extraordinary, and you never think you're ever going to go back to not remembering.
Well, a very moving and powerful moment in the movie is when you've gone to your first campsite and you're there changing what we find out later is you're changing the water filter. But by then, like, you've seen John as, you know, something is not right with John in terms of his memory. But then you poke your head in, you're looking at your wife. Helen Mirren plays her wife, and you've completely changed. You are there. You are John Spencer, the man who she remembers, and you can see it on her face. And she says to you, "I love it when something like I love it when you come back to me."
Exactly.
And then like that,
I'm gone.
You're gone.
Yeah, and it happened automatically. It wasn't. There was nothing that was contrived. It just happened. Everything happened. She's a glory, Helen Mirren. She's the. I'm so sorry she isn't here because she'd talk esteem to you. And I just love her. I love being with her.
Was it difficult to keep flipping between from one person to another person, like in an instant like that? How'd you do that?
It sounds stupid, but I didn't do it. I mean, it's not a technical thing. It's he took over.
John.
Yeah. He took over, and he would say stuff that both Paolo and Helen and me and Stephen Amidon, the writer, were surprised came out of his mouth, but they were incredibly true, and they were incorporated in the piece. It's it was a magical thing. It happens every once in a while in the film.
You mentioned Paolo, and the Paolo you're talking Paolo about.
Paolo Virzi, yeah.
Yes, Paolo Virzi. Was that his first time directing a movie in the States?
It's the first time in directing a movie in English.
In English.
And he chooses to do an American road trip with an English actress and a Canadian actor. Good luck.
Right. In America. What was that like? What was it like working with him on this really a maiden voyage?
Well, we were in a 1973 Winnebago. They'd taken the bathroom out to make room for the camera. And so there would be 8 Italian men and a couple of Italian women behind us as we drove along the highway.
The noise
was incredible.
Now, that's a lot of people in this camera.
Yeah, huge. Yeah.
The story is you've escaped, basically. You and your John Spencer and his wife get in the Winnebago, and they live in Massachusetts,
yep.
And they're making their way down to
Key West.
Yeah. For
Hemingway's house.
Right, for Hemingway's house. And you're behind, you're actually driving.
Nobody else could drive it.
Seriously.
No, absolutely seriously.
And so you're driving this Winnebago. Have you had experience driving the Winnebago?
Yeah, I've driven everything. But I haven't driven anything with brakes that were quite as bad as this one, but I've driven pretty much everything.
So in doing all, how much time did the two of you and Helen Mirren have to rehearse?
I don't think we did. I don't remember rehearsing. I mean, I'm not a big fan of rehearsing. I like to rehearse for the theater, obviously. But films are that instantaneous moment. And if you rehearse, you can rehearse it away. You know. But then I like 30 takes. Nowadays, they only do 2.
Is it hard to the transition from the stage to film? To be able to, is it just acting?
No, it's just work.
Work. Yeah. Work.
Well, I mean, it's work. I mean, it is work. It's hard work, you know. A lot of time and, you know, movie making. I'm doing Trust in England, which is Danny Boyle's television series about John Paul Getty and his dynasty. And it's really hard.
So let's talk about this film more specifically and your relationship with your wife Ella Spencer, played by Helen Mirren, and you play a couple that's been married for a long, long time. You see it in the movie. There's such tenderness there. You are affectionate in ways that we don't often see older people in movies. But we also see moments, in addition to the tenderness, the moments where you get really angry.
And frustrated.
And that's not something you see in movies a lot either.
No, it's not very charming. but it's true. And, we get angry, we get happy, we get hopeful,
you get jealous?
Yes, of course. She's on the motorcycle, and I say, you're not wearing a helmet, but she's on a motorcycle with a guy.
Right. Well, she's on the motorcycle because you've left her. You took off in the Winnebago, not realizing that she wasn't even in the Winnebago with you.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to make an excuse for myself. John would be able to make an excuse for himself.
Well, which is what he did. You are listening to, and I'm sure you recognize the voice. That is Donald Sutherland, and we are talking about his new movie with Helen Mirren called The Leisure Seeker. It's about John and Ella Spencer who jump in their Winnebago and drive from Massachusetts to Key West to Hemingway's house. We were talking about their relationship, the anger and the jealousy. There's the scene in Williamsburg, where an old student sees Professor Spencer, the young woman, attractive with her two children. And we've seen John not remember all sorts of things, details about his family, and yet this former student comes up and he remembers exactly who she is, where she went to college after his class, who her friend was.
But that happens. It just suddenly everything is there, present in front of you. Everything, and it's time has stopped, and you're with her. You're back there. It's and back there is now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very beautiful. But for someone watching it, who has to see you not remember your son, it's quite painful.
You're mentioning that not remembering your son. There's a particularly powerful scene for me in the movie, and it happens frequently. Well, relatively frequently. John and Ella are sitting outside. They've strung up a blanket. And they're basically flipping through old slides,
yep,
of the family and memories. And she's quizzing John on, well, who is that? And do you remember that? And filling in the blanks. And the beautiful thing about that first time we see it is the people in the campground who gather in the background. They don't say anything. They're just watching. Was that scripted? Was that a planned thing, or did someone decide, let's have people just sort of be a part of their life, but they don't realize that they're a part of their life in this moment?
I can't remember. I mean, it's true. It's true. I can't remember. I'm sure it was scripted.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the blanket and the photographs were scripted.
Right.
And people came up because they had lines,
mm-hmm,
so they had stuff to say, like, we should do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, that girl is hot. And then I would say, that's my daughter. And they'd say, sorry.
Uh-huh. So, Paolo Vici, the director, he called you, both of you, brilliant comedians, and said that you're especially unpredictable. How much do you like to change it up between takes? I know you said a moment ago that you don't even remember rehearsals. You don't like rehearsals. But how much did you change it up?
What do you mean, change it up?
Well, between takes, you have your lines.
I don't know about that. That's just it's not a question of changing it up or adding variety. It's a question of the job is a passionate endeavor to get as close as you can to what you believe is to be the truth,
mm-hmm,
the definitive truth about the character of the situation, of the dilemma, of the piece of theater, the piece of cinema, and so it isn't a question of changing it up. It's the ability to move forward, constantly forward. Maybe you'll go backward a second, but mm-hmm, it's onward, always onward.
You shot in June of 2016.
Yeah.
So we're in the middle of a presidential campaign. You encounter a Trump rally.
We do.
How'd that come up?
I don't know. That was in the script too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
and when the movie opens, your son is driving to the house where he thinks he's going to see his mom and dad, and a pickup truck comes by with Donald Trump's voice booming on a loudspeaker, and the truck's got Trump flags and things like that flying behind. Is that just meant to be just a time and place? Or is it meant to infuse some sort of something to the story?
I have no idea. I have no idea only because the rally, specifically, I'm sure if Paolo were to explain it to you, would say that it was to identify how much John had lost what he was. Well, he was a left-wing liberal,
mm-hmm,
Democrat, I guess, and he was just happy with all the enthusiasm at the Trump rally, and he joined it,
mm-hmm,
without thinking about the truck. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie.
What do you mean you haven't seen the movie?
I mean, I don't go see movies I'm in, but
really?
Helen hasn't seen it either.
Wait, so okay, I can understand you haven't seen it yet because
I haven't seen Clute.
It's going way back. Wait, so why?
I did an interview with Anderson Cooper,
mm-hmm,
in November for CBS, and they were showing me films that I had done. I was astounded. They showed me a piece of with Jane and myself. I couldn't believe it. I loved it. I'm going to go look at it, seriously. Wait, when I have some time.
Okay, so let's roll this back for a second. You have not seen any of your movies.
Some of them. Yeah, Six Degrees of Separation I saw.
Okay, Six Degrees of Separation you didn't see. What else?
I did see it.
Oh, you did see
it? Yeah.
And I saw it. I saw it too. I remember that clearly. I remember you in it clearly. But I'm still just sort of mystified. Why don't you go see some of your own movies? Is it because you didn't really feel good about the performance, or you just...
Oh, my wife would kill me. I give a character, but the character is... people are going to hate me. The character is alive inside me. He is truly, and he has arms where arms are supposed to be, and legs where legs are supposed to be. And then you deliver all that material to an editor, and the editor cuts the arm and the leg off and puts them in different places. And I could be fine, but my character goes nuts. No, but that's why. And that's why when I saw Clute, I was just a piece of it. Mm-hmm. I was so distanced from it that I could look at it objectively, but subjectively, no. Bob Redford said that I had to come see Ordinary People, and forced me into the premiere. And after the first shot came up, on my hands and my knees, crawling over people's feet, I crawled all the way down the aisle, all the way down the row of seats that I was sitting in, and then up the aisle, and then out, gone.
Because you just didn't want to see it.
I can't. I mean, the guy is so crazy inside me. Mm-hmm. It sounds stupid.
It doesn't, because it makes sense what you're saying, given how you talked about John Spencer and the character, because it's not so much that you're reading about John Spencer when you're reading the script. John Spencer is talking to you. He comes into you, and that's how you decide, if I remember right, that's how you decide whether a character is for you, if the character basically chooses you. Mm-hmm. While you're reading it.
But you remember when we were talking and I stuck my arm out?
Yeah.
It was to show you that all my hair was standing up because of what you were saying, because how it thrilled me.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, do you remember all of the characters you play?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
I don't have a favorite child. It's the same thing. If I were to say, Jean Moreau wrote a biography, and my wife was a friend of hers, and Jean Moreau came to her saying, I'm never going to write a biography like that again. In her biography, she had said, I realized that I never loved anyone. And she said, as soon as the book came out and people read it, she got call after call from lovers saying, but you told me you loved me. She said, from now on, I'll just write a biography, and I'll just say there's only one person I ever loved. No, I don't have a favorite, but there are some I'd like to sit and have a chat with.
Like which one?
Well, I'd love to sit, if Fellini would sit with me, I'd love to go back and have a chat with Casanova.
Mm-hmm.
But I did enjoy being with Oddball and Kelly's Heroes. And there are a lot of them. I liked Flynn, Flanders, mm-hmm. in 6 Degrees. I liked him a lot.
You know, I wonder, is there like you've gone to a movie, have you ever watched a role where you thought, wow, I would have loved to have played that character?
No.
Never?
Well, I don't remember if I did. No, I don't mm-hmm. think so.
Do any of the characters that who you have played, do any of them linger? Do any of them stay with you long after you've played them?
All of them.
All of them.
Yeah, they all do. Yeah, almost all. There are some that are not terribly admirable, but I have loved them all. You know, I mean, Coriolanus Snow in Hunger Games. I had huge affection for him, for his rationality, for his. Well, I liked him a lot.
Do you?
You know, when I'm walking through an airport, then just after that film, young girls, 10, 11, 12, 14, would stop with their mother and say, could I have my picture taken with you? And I'd say, okay. And either I would lean down or they would get a box or something and stand up on it and stand beside me. And just as the photograph was about to be taken, they would lean towards me and say, "Could you please look mean?" I go, "But he wasn't mean. He wasn't mean. He was precise in his discipline and his need. He didn't do anything vengefully." Anyway. They'd had that Winnebago all of their family's life. It was in a garage.
Right.
It was just left over. It was not in very good shape.
No, it wasn't. It smoked a lot, and the Spencer's.
Yeah, I'm allergic to smoke.
No, so then how did you do that those scenes, or were they like cutaways? Yeah, and yeah. So you didn't.
No,
really
no,
have
no,
to...
no, no, no. I'm allergic to tobacco smoke.
Oh, tobacco smoke.
1983, I lost insurance for a movie, and they sent me to a doctor, and he did all those patch tests on my arm,
right?
And it came out that I was allergic to whatever came off a burning tobacco product. In 1983. Good luck.
I wish you could stay the entire hour, but you can't, and I've got to go.
You have to go.
Yeah.
I'm staying.
I bet Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernard would love that. But I'm Jonathan Capehart, and I've been speaking with the acclaimed, prolific actor whose voice I'm sure you recognize. It's Golden Globe winner Donald Sutherland, whose latest film is The Leisure Seeker. Mr. Sutherland, thank you very much for being here today.
Yes, and if you haven't paid your dues, pay your dues.
Coming up, Lee Berman and Jeremy Bernard discuss the power of civility at work and in life. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back.